Your indulgence as we've just finished up the CRA meeting. Randy?
Yes, sir.
We have changes to the agenda?
Yes, sir. Just a request to table item 12D, which is the Fifth Third Bank development agreement. They still aren't quite together, but they feel like they're very close, so they're both parties are requesting you table it one more time to the next meeting.
12D. Great. Okay. I wanted to get out in front of that, but Randy, I understand our Reverend May could not stick around.
That's
so,
correct.
Will you be reading?
Yes, sir.
Doing the invocation, please.
I will do that. Thank you.
So if you all stand, please, for the invocation and stay standing for our Pledge of Allegiance.
Our Heavenly Father, we thank you for this day and this opportunity to gather together and conduct the business of the city. Lord, we pray for the wisdom of for the commissioners as they deal with each of these items, Lord, that your will would be done in everything that we do. Of course, in your name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thanks, Randy. And just to restate what the city manager just mentioned, folks, if you're here for item 12D, it has been pulled from the agenda. The attorneys for both parties requested that, so they're tabling it to a point in the future that has not been named yet. Okay, besides that, do we have approval of the agenda?
So moved.
I'll second that. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Folks, this is the time of year that we have a separate opportunity to address the commission in regards to specific budgetary issues given our budget season. If anybody would like to address the commission regarding this year's upcoming budget, please step forward and hand your yellow card to the city clerk.
Joe Tannenova, 151 North Virginia Avenue. Never refuse a request.
I was just thinking opportunity. Just wait.
One last item with regard to the budget. I noticed in there that there was a substantial reduction in current budget for communications tax revenue. I'm assuming that's because less and less people are using landlines, and we're losing that tax. But what it brings to me an item for staff, perhaps more than you all at this point to consider, is that if we have a major, serious situation here in Winter Park, we can almost guarantee you that you cannot make a cell phone call. Everybody will be on the cell phones. I know, because that's what happened to me on 9/11. I was up in an airplane. And if someone were then to be able to interfere with the satellite communication, we'd have no way to communicate, or at least not that I'm aware of. And I think it's something that we ought to look at very carefully. We have a system where we're supposed to notify our people if there's a crisis. Well, if you can't get through, how are you going to notify them? How are you going to contact your first responders? I think that's something that staff needs to look at and come with some kind of assurance. I know there are other people that are thinking about it on a higher level, but we're focusing just on Winter Park's budget now, and that's why I'd like to bring it up. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. Any other comments? Great. We'll close the floor to public comment. Guys, on the city, on the agenda here, the mayor's report, my advisory board discussion was really coming out of a discussion that I had with a representative from Rollins College. And as we looked at the sustainability and Keep Winter Park Beautiful board, they have a whole sustainability program over there. And I don't know if we need to do this, but what I was thinking was, as probably the largest landholder in Winter Park and someone who's committed to sustainability, it might make sense to earmark a position on that board for somebody from Rollins. I can always just, we can just bring forward an appointee from Rollins if you like, but I thought it would be nice to have some synergy between their efforts and the city's efforts as, again, probably the largest land in the market. I just really just want to get your thoughts on that.
Can I be approved?
Sure.
Anytime.
You can always go.
Jumping up here. anytime we can talk to Rollins and have Rollins involved in what the city's doing and vice versa, I think that's a plus. We're neighbors. We need to work together. So to have someone on one of the advisory boards, I think is I think that's good. Okay. You know, I think communication is key.
And I think that board allows for it. We have how many?
That's one of our large
boards.
Huge
already.
Like 11 people.
Do we have any 15? Open slots, so we're not adding new slots?
We do have open slots right
good.
Now. I believe
that was my question. I'd rather fill an open slot.
Me too.
Than add. Well, because I'm certainly in favor of the thought process here of having a member from Rollins, whether it's allocated on that right. basis or whatever, how you want to do it, Mayor. But I'd rather keep the board from expanding even more, just from a logistics standpoint.
Okay.
I absolutely agree with that, but my other point is what I've kind of watched over the years is I also would want that position to rotate. I don't want the same person from Rollins on that board for the next 10 years. Just like our positions rotate, I want them to appoint like our fire and police to do the pension board.
They would have the same sunset time.
Yeah, that's what I just like to make sure.
That's a good point. I just assumed that they would be appointed.
Well, I made that mistake. I made the mistake when years ago I recommended that we put the Chamber of Commerce president on our Economic Development Advisory Board. And it never occurred to me that what I said is one person on that board forever, and that's not necessarily the best thing. But there's other people in management or on that board that I would feel very comfortable about doing.
That would be just like any other board member. They have X number of terms that individual could serve. And
well, my goal was to make it just a three-year term, just like every other.
Yes.
But I think Rollins was looking, and in my discussion with them when we talked about it, when I offered it, they thought that they would probably just rotate a student annually on it. So I don't think we need to make
a student.
They'd like a representative who's in their sustainability program.
Sure.
I think
they talked during the last campaign about
getting students more involved in the government. Yeah. I think that's a really interesting way to handle it.
And they're a good voice on campus, anyway. Yeah.
I have a quick one. Would this student have access to the folks at Rollins from what they're doing? Or
that's what I was more concerned about, was getting a Rollins representative. I thought we were talking
And that's my point. This student is part of that kind of internship, if you will, be the go-between between the folks at Rollins.
That was my intent, to have them represent the sustainability program, somebody in their program, and I'd almost hope that they would offer someone to fill that seat.
No, I think that's exciting.
A question for Randy and for the city attorney. Do we need to, can we just assign that, or do we need to go through any kind of different appointment process?
No, as long as you'd have to have an ordinance to create additional seats. If there's a vacancy, you would appoint as normal.
And if you want it to be kind of a mandatory ongoing thing, you'd want to include it in the ordinance. If you just want to formally do it, you can certainly do that without changing the
right, because if we're going to take a slot that currently belongs to the residents of Winter Park, then we need to do something with the ordinance if we're going to say it's a mandatory position for them, set aside for them, I would think. I mean, I'm comfortable bringing someone on, but
why don't we do this? If you guys are okay with this, what I'll do is I'll reach out to Rollins, and I think it should be a resident. Hopefully the student has registered to vote here, and that could certainly be something we...
That's interesting.
Well, if it's not a resident, I know you're a big part of having residents.
I hear you. Yes,
I'll ask them just to offer a few names and a few resumes, and if we need to next year make it a more permanent or an identified position, we can do that. Is that okay with everyone?
Sure.
The other thing, Mr. Mayor, as we consider students, is I know that we do have a portion in our just overall board thing that if you're absent for so many meetings,
yes,
that you're no longer on there, we may have to look at that, because obviously there's a potential the student might not be here over the summer and miss, through no fault of their own,
that's fair,
X number of meetings. So there may be some tweaking of how we deal with that position.
And in discussing that,
I certainly wouldn't want to discount the student because they're...
He has some flexibility here. We'll try to figure that out. But I think it'd be nice to have that represented here.
I'm with you. No,
okay.
That's a good
idea. Good. And then with that, Cindy, can you tell me how many board positions we have open? I know there's sustainability. Do we have lakes and waterways still?
Yes, and Ped and Bike.
Bike and Ped. Okay, great.
Thank you.
I will hopefully have names back for you guys at the next meeting, or appointments. Randy, the membership on the development of the DRC, this is for you.
We, in functioning now with the DRC over this last few months, we had an unintended consequence from the original appointees, and that was that by having both Jeff Briggs and Dory as voting members, they weren't able to have conversations about the Ramadosh project, for example, outside of the published meetings. And you know, and they're key staff members that need to be able to have conversations about the project and you know, looking at the codes and all the type of things they have to do together. So we're requesting that Jeff Briggs be replaced. So we're suggesting John Holland.
Who's on the, who else on the board?
Can you name all the people that are on?
Yes. Troy Attaway, Public Works, George Wiggins, Building, Michelle Nooner, City Administration, myself, and right now Jeff Briggs. And I was appointed there when I was running CRA Economic Development. And since we merged, now you've got two planning folks on the same board.
And it just makes it very difficult for them, from a staff standpoint, to be able to talk about the project. So Jeff would then kind of be the staff liaison from planning to the board. So.
And no offense to Mr. Holland, but do we see a need to have somebody from utilities on there?
I'll be honest with you, with regard to the...
Sorry, Dory, would you mind?
I didn't get all those down real fast either. So it's the building department, public works department, parks.
Parks is what she's suggesting.
I had spoken with Randy about it.
You know, it makes there's two people to consider. One would be Dave Zusi with utilities or John Holland with Parks and Rec. There are, you know, almost slightly under 500 dwelling units available on that project. There are going to be a number of open space and parkland requirements in Ramadosh, and so sure. I thought the Parks and Rec side of it and the more of the park service side of it would need to be addressed. The other side with looking at the utility director would be once water and sewer are established in the project, they're establishing the project. There's not a lot more. I mean, once you have the ability to serve with water and sewer, you can serve with water and sewer. So I didn't know how long-term Mr. Zusi's role was, but it doesn't matter. It's just having a director there who is at that level to help look at plans and understand what the next aspects of the project were. Having Mr. Holland there would the importance of that would be that we're looking at parkland and park development as part of this project.
I want to make it clear, we have all the departments that have issues present. This is just the voting
right.
members.
Everyone
so
is
whether
friends.
It's John Holland or David, the other one is always there.
Anyway. Always there.
Well, Dave is just looking to go to more meetings.
Yeah, we all are.
Well, what about electric? Do we have the electric company? Because that is more iffy, isn't it?
Yeah, let me, the outside, so the voting members are Public Works, Planning, City Administration, and Building. The staff that is sent is code enforcement. What do you call yourself now? Code compliance, fire, electric, sewer, water. We always have someone there from Public Works. Don Marcotte's usually there, as well as Butch representing Bike Ped. And so we have a full, the room is full with staff.
I didn't research this, but I sure would like to talk about it just a little bit. I believe that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that having differences of perspective are very, very positive. I wish I had researched this, but I believe when I went back through the minutes relative to Ravidage, there was only one vote that was different than the group, and I think that may have come from the planning director. I mean, the planning manager. I think it's important.
This doesn't have to do with different views. This has to do with need to be able to talk.
No, I understand. I just think that the planning manager is a very important person to have in the room.
And so Jeff will be there as staff. Absolutely. Jeff will.
No, I would like to be a voting member. I'm trying to be clear about that. So I'm very comfortable with that.
As opposed to Dory, is that what you're saying?
If we have to pick.
I mean, if you have to pick, because you're looking at both CRA and economic development and planning, and he is just planning. So I feel very good about having someone who's focused on just planning in that room making planning decisions. I mean, I don't, I'm just saying, I personally am very comfortable with that.
They brought this to us because they had a conflict. So, I mean, that's why
it's one or the other.
So it's one or the other, and in my mind, this is their solution, and I would vote for your solution because you've discovered you have a conflict, so we don't want you to put you at any jeopardy, so I'd go with what you've got.
So let me ask this question of the city attorney. This DRC process was set up with our negotiations with Orange County, correct, to take this back?
Yes, and also in the annexation agreement, it was agreed to apply the DRC process, to apply Orange County code to the development.
Okay, so you're okay, and this allows for changing within?
Oh, yes, there's no question. The city can change the DRC composition.
But it has to be only one person from a department?
It's extremely awkward because Dory and Jeff have to talk about planning issues for Ravadage, but if they're not careful, they could be violating the sunshine.
Yeah, we operate in the sunshine the same as you do. Yeah. And having offices next door to each other and looking at the same plan makes it almost impossible for us
to talk.
We can't talk. Yeah. So, I mean, it's
the whole cities that way. We all,
it's a
pretty small family.
Let me ask you a question, Randy. Are you looking for a motion here? Can I have a motion within the mayor's report, or do you need to have it brought back?
Yes, I see this just like other appointments that the commission would, you would make the recommendation and the commission would ratify.
Okay. And Larry, are you comfortable with that as well?
Yes, and it's really an internal matter that doesn't require public comment or anything like that.
Great. Then I'm going to support the staff's recommendation to revise the DRC membership to include Parks and Rec and to have the current Mr. Briggs' position, I'm going to screw it up here, as a staff liaison. Look for a second on that?
I'll second.
Great. Is there any further discussion, guys? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner. City Manager's Report. Randy?
Yes, sir. I just want to remind the commission that on August the 20th, we have the Celebrate Winter Park function at the Alfine Den from 5:30 to 7:30. That's part of the Vision Winter Park process, where we'll have a special speaker come into town. We're looking to get 500 people there, and I think we have a little over 200 RFPs at this point. So,
RSVPs?
RIPs or RSVPs?
Recruit your neighbors and friends to come out for that. And if you haven't done so, please turn in your budget worksheets. They were due last Wednesday, but we have some time.
I'd say if they haven't turned them in, they shouldn't be.
No, it's just taking late.
For someone who finally got his in on time.
That's true.
That concludes my report. I'd be glad to answer any
Thank
questions.
You. Commissioner Sprinkle.
So I noticed that on your report that you give us that the two portable buildings finally fell off?
Well, because they finally complied with all the code requirements for the building. They finished to get their CO. Okay. Now, they haven't, to my knowledge, gotten their license to operate the daycare, but the building itself now met all the codes.
And that was all we asked them to do, was to meet the codes, not to license it?
No, we asked them to do that too.
Right.
But the building itself, you know, the thing we were putting on there was that they didn't have the skirting, they looked terrible.
Didn't we have a date of September 15th of 2015, or September 2015 for this to get done by?
I don't know the exact date, but George, there was 3 years from the conditional use was for 3 years.
Well, but the conditional use isn't for the building to get open, it's to run it as a daycare, right? And I just felt like when it fell off here, I didn't want that to get lost, because September is next a couple or 3 weeks away, and I thought that's when it was up.
All right, we'll follow up with that.
All right. Just put that back under
review. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions for the city manager? Commissioner Cooper.
I have two questions. The first one on the historic preservation ordinance. It says that they have now approved the ordinance, so why can't it come forward now as opposed to November? I mean, if it's finished, I don't know what the next step is.
They have approved a draft. The draft was what was actually discussed at the public forums. The HPB still left to make some modifications. They approved a draft for basically public discussion as part of the when they went forward with the forums. I will tell you that they are on track to bring this back by your November deadline. So they will be, they're still making modifications to it. They're still going to discuss it at this week's meeting. So they are on track to get a final recommendation to you.
Just mislabel on here? Can we just have ongoing, just, I think
yes.
When you say approved,
I would say it was approved as a draft, but they're still working on it.
But they voted on it.
They voted on the draft, yes ma'am.
I just think it's time to bring it on forward.
So months ago before they agreed to go back and consider.
They themselves want to make some changes.
Was that a long time ago that they voted on it?
It would have been in March.
Yeah. Before the public workshop, I think.
Yes, before the public workshop, okay. And that was
I just hate
April.
To drag this thing on, and I'd just like to get it on up here and take
you,
care of
as
it.
As a commission, you have you've given them to November, yeah. And they are shooting for the November date.
I don't think we should change that at this point.
All right. The next thing that, thank you very much, Jordan. The next thing I wanted to ask you about was when we discussed the business tax with George, raising the business tax, we had a consensus to kind of take a look at and compare our business tax to other municipalities to see if indeed we've made the right decision. I'm kind of hoping that we know that before we vote on the budget, because if it needs to be in there, we ought to put it in there. Okay. And if it doesn't, we need to just move on.
We do. We have a detailed analysis to give you on that.
Oh, perfect. Is that something we can just...
Yeah, we can send that to you.
Okay, perfect. That was it. Thank you very much, George.
Mr. Seidel. Oh, sorry. I thought you had
your
hand up. Guys, are we okay? Any other questions for the city manager?
No.
City attorney, Larry, anything?
Nothing to report.
Okay. Any questions? For Mr. Sir. Brown. No. Wes, you're up.
Mayor and Commissioners, we have a financial report for you for the 9 months ended June 30. Beginning with the general fund, looking at our revenues, our communication services tax that Mayor Terranova referenced earlier. They've improved a little bit over where they were earlier, began the year, but we were probably still going to be about $230,000 short there of our budget estimate. Our building permit revenues are probably going to be in the $100,000 to $150,000 short range. We're going to as we've mentioned before, our red light camera revenues are down some. And so overall we expect to be about $400,000 short on our projected revenues. Now offsetting that is a one-time revenue source from the sale of the 300 North Pennsylvania property. But we're watching our expenses and we hope to be able to balance our budget without that receipt. The CRA, there's nothing particularly remarkable there in the CRA fund. Going on to water and sewer, we have a positive bottom line for 9 months of $1.4 million. We project debt service coverage to be just barely under 2 times, so that's very good. And our electric sales are right on target with our budget there. Our fuel costs are recovered by about $600,000 for the 9 month ended June 30, and that puts us right in target with where we want our fuel state cost stabilization fund to be. Spending a little more on capital than we had planned, our debt service coverage will probably be about 2.5 times there, which is still very good. And each quarter we give you an investment report. And so our holdings, we had an average blended return of 1.45%. We've got a little bit out of whack with our one limitation in our investment policy, and that's how much of our portfolio can be in federal instrumentalities. And our limitation is 80%, and we're a little bit over that. We'll rebalance between now and September 30 so that we have that in compliance with all aspects of our investment policy by then. And those are the highlights.
Okay. I'm assuming there's no penalties for being out of balance for a short term?
Correct.
Okay. Any questions for Wes?
No, sir.
Great. Wes, thank you. We will accept this. Let's move on to the consent agenda. We'll start that because we have 15 minutes to the 5 o'clock hour.
I'd like to pull the minutes, please.
Okay, pull 10A.
July 22nd, yes.
Any other?
I don't know.
The only one.
This is the only thing. 10B is not up?
10B, if you'd like, you can pull it.
No, I want to pull it. I approve it.
Great, so
I would move that we approve the consent agenda minus the minutes.
Okay, anyone in the public wishing to address the commission on the consent agenda item 10B? Please step forward. Seeing none, we'll close the floor to public comment. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Great. Commissioner Cooper, 10A.
Okay, on page...
Do I need to second that last one?
Was that not
seconded? Should I have seconded?
I thought you did second. I thought someone seconded.
I'll second it.
Perfect.
I'm getting understanding how this works.
Yes, you're getting it. Yeah. On page 36 of our packet, which is page 10 of 12 of the minutes,
yes.
If you look at the very last sentence, and this is just an ongoing issue that I would love to correct with the minutes, it says, upon questioning regarding the commission's ability to approve a lesser zoning without going back through PNC, Attorney Brown responded. Now, I was trying to remember what Attorney Brown said because I went to the minutes particularly to find out what the rules were about that. And the problem is, especially the attorney, but when we ask questions, a lot of times in the minutes it will say something was asked or something was discussed, but it never tells us. Like this says
what
it
said?
Right, there's a question. It says we asked the question, but it doesn't say. So my request would, I would like to move to approve the minutes with the addition of Attorney Brown's response to the question.
I'll second that.
I'll certainly.
Thank you.
Cindy, do you recall?
She can find it. I don't even want to guess what it was.
Well, it's probably
the audio tape.
She has it.
I don't think we're looking for a...
No, not a quote. It's just...
I was trying to keep more action minutes. That's
no, I understand. But especially with the city attorney.
I'd like
to be able to...
Great. That's been moved. Perfect. Seconded. Thank you. Open the floor to public comment. Anyone like to address the commission on 10A? Seeing none, we'll close the floor. Any discussion here? Great. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. On to, we have time to do the undergrounding. We will hold public comments until after 11A. Jerry, the retread, buddy.
Take two.
3 minutes. Hey, we're still we're over time here.
Patrick, I might need your help here. It's up on my screen.
Patrick.
How about go back to extend and see if it works out? It makes it easier for me. Usually it works. I tell you what, is it duplicate one of the choices?
Perfect.
Thank you.
Really, the only difference in
what we said before is this one's going to have a little bit more perspective than what we talked about during the CRA meeting. Just a little bit of background, you know about our Fairbanks project. Basically, what you see here on the map is the part that is blue, which begins at I-4, comes all the way into the intersection of Harper and Comstock. That is the part that is being undergrounded per the agreement that we have with Duke and the FDOT. The red parts that you see are existing overhead, and under our existing plan, we don't have any intention of undergrounding those. We have agreements with Duke and Department of Transportation to place those wires underground. The Department of Transportation has agreed to fund up to $11.5 million of that. We believe that the distribution and the transmission will cost less than $11.5 million, but it is our responsibility without regard to that budget amount. And the main purpose is nothing more but to clean what we believe to be an important gateway road up, make it more attractive for economic development. We have really talented people in our communications department. This is what it looks like. This is what we think it's going to look like when they get done. And you can see the removal of the wires is pretty spectacular. I suppose, Clarissa, I should get Teresa to try to put decorative lights on it. That's what's missing, and she can do that.
But even that is just...
This looks much
better. It looks much better. So maybe a month ago, Troy's not here, a month or so ago, Troy came to me and he said, what is this terrible pole that is at the intersection of Fairbanks and I-4? And, you know, I'm an electric guy. I see stuff like this, and I think it's a work of art. And so I go over there, and I do all that. It looks like money. It just seems like it's happy. It looks like money to me. So I go there to see what it is that Troy's talking about, and I see this pretty good sized pole. It's a self-supporting pole, and what that means, you see there are wires that go west along the existing overhead Fairbanks, then there are wires that go north. Every one of those wires has somewhere between 3,000 and 4,000 pounds of tension on it. And so you got four wires there, 16,000, 8 tons. You know, pulling. And so normally what electric utility do would put big guy wires in there to support the pole. Well, a self-supporting pole will take that 8 tons of pressure, so it's very big. It's probably almost 4 feet at the base, 40, 42 inches or so, I would guess. And there's this giant concrete foundation that goes down 30 or 40 feet into the ground, keep it from pulling over. So that, you know, I'm thinking, gosh, is this what Troy's all concerned about? And then I get down there and I look at the base and you see this giant, ugly box. And that's Terry Hotard standing next to it, so you can see it's 20 feet or so tall. And I had no clue what that was. I couldn't tell from my car, so I got out and went and looked at it. It's hollow. There's a grate underneath. There's a grate on the top. And I said, it's the cable guard. It's going to be where the cables come out of the ground and go up to the pole. And so, yes, indeed, it's pretty ugly. I'm walking away from, you know, my field trip, and I'm going, oh, my gosh, there's going to be one of these things at the corner of Harper and Comstock. It'll be the same thing, self-supporting structure, going to have the nasty big box on the side. So I approached Duke, and, of course, their reaction is, well, chair, where were you back in May when we showed you a picture of what this thing was going to look like? I just want to show you what they provided to me. And, you know, they take it from the other side. You can't see the box. And they take it from
fire truck
in front of it, thousands of feet away. And, you know, there's just no sense of scale whatsoever. So, you know, they pretty much hoodwinked me back in May when they showed me the picture. And so, anyway, you know, we go over, this is a picture of Terry standing next at the corner of Comstock and Harper. There's a wood tangent pole there. And that would be replaced with another one of these boogers that would be really, really big and self-supporting and would have a big box on the side. And you can see the big black ugly cables that will come up the side. Those suckers are going to be greater than 6 inches in diameter, and there will be three of them. And so, you know, why am I here? This is not my facility. This is not the electric utility. It's because I saw this. I knew it was going to be ugly. And I didn't want you guys 3 years from now to say, my goodness, why didn't you tell us this was going to happen?
And so, you know, we approached Duke and we said, what's the logical question the city commission would ask? And that would be, how much would it cost incrementally to go the extra 0.46 miles to the substation? 3 weeks ago, they gave me a price of $3.7 million. And, you know, I'm thinking, how would we pay for this? A lot of partners, and I'll talk about that in a second. But one of the things that's critical is the cash flow. You know, we got to write a big check right up front. Would it be spread out over multiple fiscal years? And so I went back to Duke, and I said, can you give me at least an approximate cash flow? And they did. You saw that during the CRA meeting. But the really good news is that...
Jerry, I'm sorry. Would you call that cash flow up for the folks that were not...
Sure. I'm going to get there. It's just a few slides down. The good news is it goes over multiple fiscal years, which... You know, to the degree we can get some funding partners to help us, you know, maybe it's bite-sized pieces that we could handle. Before we talk about the cash flow, one of the things I just wanted to talk about is Harper Street, you know, in general. There are trees on both sides, you know, where we're down there talking about Lakeside Crossing, where we put new trees, new very large oak trees on the west side. You should know there are oak trees on the east side already. They're not in the right-of-way. They're back from the right-of-way. And there are Drake Elms and, what are the flowering trees?
Crape Myrtles.
Crape Myrtles are on the east side as well. They're built right underneath the transmission line. So you notice the oak trees. This is Harper Street looking south from Morse Boulevard. You can already see the oak trees on the left side, which are on the east side, back behind the right-of-way. You already can begin to see the vertical pruning that Duke is doing on those oak trees. You get a little further south on Harper, continuing to look south, and you can see the very decided vertical trim that is occurring on the left. You can see a little bit on that butchered tree on the right as well. And when you get even further south down by the Island Lake Hall Recreation Building, you see even that tree on the left has a vertical pruning going on it. So basically, you're going to find a street that's going to be severely pruned. You're going to have a wall about midway out in the street where it's pruned, and then on the other side, the east side, it's going to be vertically pruned. And these smaller trees that are right under the power line, the Drakes and the Crape Myrtles, are going to become little more than tall bushes. And so you're going to have a street that's going to look like a giant U when it reaches its maturity. And, you know, this is our crown jewel park. You're looking at it as a possible site for a library. And so that's why Jerry's here to say, you know, I just want to warn you that as it is, this is a project that's not going to be particularly attractive in the future. So we're going to have the ugly termination self-supporting structure at the corner of Harper and Comstock. You'll have transmission line along the east side. It will limit the planting of underbuilt trees on that side, and it also is going to result in a very severe pruning of the trees that we're going to plant on the west side. They have estimated the incremental cost to go from the corner of Harper Comstock to our substations to be about $3.9 million. And the decision, we have to make the decision very quickly. They would like it right now. And so if we don't do it right now, I mean, clearly we could come back later and say we've changed our mind or we now have a funding source, let's do it now. This cost is the incremental cost. In other words, we're already undergrounding, we've already buying the cable, we're already buying the conduit system. If we do it right now, this is the price. If we come back later, you know, one of the big costs that you're going to encounter is they're going to have to remove the self-supporting termination pole, and that would be a very expensive process. And so we're going to lose the value of the incremental, the benefits of doing it incrementally. Our engineers, our consultants tell us that they just had to guess it would be plus 25%, plus whatever inflation we might experience between now and that time in the future when we might make that decision. Here's the cash flow. You can see they want $150,000 up front. That's for the engineering and surveying, the extra engineering and surveying associated with the project. I've asked them if we were to give them a yes and sign a letter of commitment, would they allow us to defer that till after October 1, so it would be in next year's budget. I have not had a response yet. Next June, bid award, they want $450,000. And then you can see monthly various payments be made. July, $450,000. August, $580,000. September, $420,000. And so the total for fiscal year 2016 will be $1.9 million.
Which doesn't include the $150,000.
Does not include the $150,000. You're correct. And then beginning November, October 2016, $390,000. The $1,180,000 in November, that's the time cable is about to be delivered. That's an expensive piece of this project. And then the final payment will be made in December, $267,000. And so the fiscal 2017 total would be $1.8 million, a total of $3.88 million. We talked about funding partners, and you know, basically at this point, and I don't know how you do this, and maybe you say, Jerry, sorry, we can't do that. I would like a decision out of you. Yes, we want to do this, or no, we don't want to do it. And then put the burden on me to go to Duke and say, our commission says yes, we want to negotiate a reimbursement agreement with you of some type, and maybe that'll be good enough for them to proceed with the engineering. Our good faith commitment to pay them the $150,000, hopefully after October 1. But when you think about funding partners, we're going to ask Duke. You know, part of the $3.8 million, and understand that overhead line down Fairbanks, there's two pieces to that project. One piece is the part that FDOT has agreed to fund, and it's about $8.4 million of the $11.5 million is transmission. They are increasing the capacity of that line. They are making the conductor bigger so that it'll carry 2,000 amps a load. That's much more expensive. And they're insulating it for 115,000 volts instead of the 69,000 at which they operated. So Duke is eating that incremental cost to increase the capacity of the transmission line down Fairbanks. Rest assured, the entire $3.9 million is for the upgrade as well. And so, you know, the first thing we're going to do is go to Duke and say, look, we don't want to pay for the upgrade. If you guys want to upgrade it, then that should be your tab. I don't know whether they will agree with me or not, but at least it's a question that we need to ask.
What percentage would you say that is?
I don't know the answer to that question.
Can you guess?
20%, 25%, something like that.
Not 50.
No, 50. You know, the duct bank system wouldn't make much difference, and it's just going to be in conductor and conductor pulling, so that would be my guess. The total conductor cost is about $1.5 million, so, you know, and that's all the way from I-4 to the substation, so it wouldn't be as big as you'd like it. We would like to sit down with the Rollins and paint them the picture of the ugly termination pole sitting on the corner of their new lacrosse complex. Maybe they would be willing to be a funding partner. We're going to go back to FDOT, yeah. And we're going to try to make a couple of cases with them. Case number one, if we can manage our distribution project and monitor Duke's construction of the transmission project and get some savings out of that $11.5 million, would the DOT be willing to pay that difference toward this? Don't know the answer to that question. But so we see options, and I can assure you that we'll give it our best shot to try to get other funding partners to the table.
But today,
at this point,
you need us to make a decision today, Jeff.
Yeah, I really would like that. I'd like to be able to go to Duke and say we're going to do it or we're not going to do it.
Okay, good. I think it's – can I just quickly poll the commission to see if we actually would like to see those lines underground? I think it's a yes from me. I'd love to see those lines underground. So now we're down to this question. All right, but I want to get that out of the way because the next thing you're going to hear is that we are intentionally doing things. Now it comes down to the 3.9. And Jerry, I think you're asking us prior to telling us what the commitments of anybody else is going to be.
That's right.
The CRA board just denied funding this, I think probably for the same reasons, because there's not clarity yet on what everybody's contribution would be. If a partner came in and offered to pay half of it, would I be interested in possibly pushing money that way and then getting the CRA? I think yes, but right now, if you're asking us to approve $3.9 million, I can't support that. That's just too big. That's one quarter of our reserves.
Jerry's not asking you to do this.
Yeah, well, I mean,
it's not my facilities. It's not my budget.
Would Jerry do that with his budget? Would Jerry take his electric budget right now? And put
I would not be very interested in taking my underground money and funding undergrounding of a new transmission line.
Yeah. In that proportion, obviously our budget's a little bit bigger than yours, but that proportion of your budget.
I get it.
Okay. Yeah. Commissioner Cooper. Sorry, Commissioner Seidel. No, Commissioner Cooper?
The question is, what does it cost us to back out? If we were to say to you today, Jerry, go forward and see what you can do about funding partners and a better distribution of this cost, what is the calendar, drop-dead date, and the amount that it would cost us to do that? Is that $150,000? Is that what it costs us to go negotiate?
I expect that's the case. I mentioned to you that Dan has a contact at Duke and has had some preliminary conversations with the fellow. He's on vacation. I guess he's going to be back next week. And so we will continue the discussions. If we can persuade Duke to phase the project, then I think maybe the drop-dead date will move out in time a little bit. But we don't know that. I don't know that tonight, standing here before you.
Commissioner Seidel.
Jerry, has the UAB weighed in on this?
No, and at this point, for a couple reasons. First of all, we're in a weird transition with the UAB. Normally, we've been meeting the second Tuesday of the month. And at the last meeting, we discussed changing that date. One of the most important things that I report to them on monthly is the status of fuel cost recovery. That second Tuesday of the month, it's about 50-50. Sometimes I know, sometimes I don't know. I don't always have all the invoices. So we've talked about moving it to later in the month. On this particular month, I think it's August 25th or 26th we're meeting. So they don't, from the time we met last till, you know, is in the middle of their meeting cycle, and so this was not brought to their attention. But the other part, which to me, unless this becomes, you know, we're going to fund it out of the underground budget, it's not my facility, so it's not an electric utility facility, and at least at this point, it's not an electric utility budget item, and so I don't really know what the topic of discussion would be at this point, but the answer to your question is not yet.
Okay, and then so the when you show the picture of the street, there's obviously lines on both sides.
Yes.
And so you're only talking about one side.
Yes.
Also. And then the other question that I had is I've seen it before on the mobile phone towers where they put like, they paint it green, they put fake branches and make it look like a tree.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something we could be doing on these things as opposed to?
We would want to put branches above ugly. I don't know.
That
would be all
there.
Useful.
To make it look like a senator. You guys remember what the senator looked like, right?
Yeah,
burned down?
Yeah. Actually, there's one over there north of Lee Road and west of 1792 that looks like a tree.
If there was any way we could approve a $150,000 expenditure to go forth and do your best to come back with something so that we were not signing on for the whole almost $4 million, that's where I would like to go. And the reason I'd like to go there is because I do think that this is an opportunity we won't always have.
Right.
I'd love for us to be able to get into this with half the cost, that we could get $2 million from other outside sources, but I don't think we're going to get this done without the city having to ante something in. I don't know where the additional, if you had $1 million next year, $1 million the following year, you've got half of it right there. If you get half of it from somewhere else, I personally think that that is well worth it for what we would have in the long run. I wouldn't stop. I trust that you guys are going to go forth, but I think this is one of the things that we have to pull the stops out and say, is there anybody else out there, FDOT or wherever else, that can help us with this? So I'm not ready to close the door on it because I think it's going to be one of those things that people stop me on the street and say, why did you let them put that pole there? Okay, because that's what people are going to say. And you can't explain it because nobody's going to listen to it. So if there's a way we can spend $150,000 to at least find out if there's more out there, I would rather go that route tonight as opposed to closing the door on it.
So, Commissioner,
you made that motion. You've got my second. Then I'll move that.
Excuse me. I want to be very clear first. I apologize. You're proposing that we spend $150,000 without any guarantee of anything moving forward. I mean, they could turn around and say, no, but we've already allocated
If there's a way we can do it without having to spend $150,000, go for it. But if we have to spend that to get that, if we have to spend $150,000 to get $4 million, and we've already got 11.5 out of FDOT, so it's not like they haven't done something for us in the past. So I feel like we owe it to ourselves to find out if we can do it.
Okay.
If I thought we had, as a city, an extra million or two sitting around over the next 2 years, I might be able to support spending $150,000. I don't, Commissioner, I just don't see that. Okay. And I'm racking my brain trying to say, who else would come in and ante up $2 million to underground this? I just think there's far more. And if I have to stand in front of citizens and say we got an ugly pole here, but we didn't take $4 million out of reserves, I'll stand there and tell them that.
I'm not asking to take $4 million out of reserves.
We're not saying that.
No, I know, but I mean, I just don't see.
But don't quit negotiating before you start.
No, if we can go back and talk to them and say if there's any other options, but I don't want to put $150 on the table.
Okay.
Well, Commissioner,
I'm just not there. I'm not confident in our ability as a city to raise the funds we would need without doing something we may not want to do.
Commissioner, I agree with you. I think the buy-in to the table at $150,000 and we can walk away with nothing is a little bit too risky. Commissioner Seidel.
Jerry, I had a question. You brought up an interesting point. You brought up the point that Duke is investing to put bigger lines in there. Mm-hmm. My question would be, where would those lines be going besides our substation?
None of us think that it's particularly a smart investment for them to upgrade.
Well, are they looking? I mean, if they could get a bigger line to our substation, would they then, in the future, bid much lower electric prices to us? And that's what they're trying to do, is be more of a provider to us at a lower price.
Maybe you could make that argument. With them insulating at 115 kV and significantly increasing the ampacity of that wire, they could deliver a lot more power. But the truth of the matter is about half of our load is served out of one substation and about half out of the other substation.
But it serves their substation,
it
too.
It serves their substation.
Their substation and ours right there.
So this is coming into both of them. It's hard for me to figure. One of the lines that goes out Fairbanks, and then it goes up Wymore Road, heads out to the Eatonville substation off of Forest City Road, and then the other one goes out of Canton and goes around behind the Kmart Plaza out Bennett Road and then cuts out through the woods and goes to the Maitland substation. So those are the two places that were connected to the grid that serve our substation. Why they would still need or believe there's going to be growth that would make sense for them to increase their investment in facilities? I guess they think they get a guaranteed return on those invest in those facilities, and they believe they can make an argument to the PSC to get them to approve it. I don't know.
So ultimately, they may want to increase the capacity on that connection anyway. And at that time, they would come to us.
But they wouldn't have to do it underground.
Right, but do they have to get a permit through us? Do they have to do anything with us, or they can just come in and make their poles not as pretty as they are right now, and we don't have any...
I think that they could reconduct to that existing pole line without any kind of permit from us, but I don't know. You think that's correct?
That's correct.
Do we have a motion? If there's someone...
I guess the one thing I want to make clear, I'm trying to think, if I'm Duke, how do I react to what I think you guys are getting ready to do, is I think you're saying we're in and we'll write you a check, hopefully after October 1, for the share of the increased surveying and engineering associated with this project. That's how committed we are, but we're probably not going to make the absolute we're in here. Checks are coming. It's a little later in the process, and they might buy that argument. They might not.
I think that it's...
Can we accept the motion from the podium? Jerry's making a motion.
Or the challenge is, when they have to order the conductor, they got to know where it is.
But that didn't happen.
Right.
They don't award that until June 1, so I
think it would buy us
to Yeah, I think it might buy us some time.
And it might give us a sense of seriousness with any funding partners that you might be talking to.
It won't.
That we're serious about this.
Right. Yeah, I don't know why you pay for an extension, though. I mean, that's to me, if I'm hearing, if we don't get 50% of the money from somewhere, that's really difficult to consider, though. No, I mean, that's you're talking, we have a budget we're dealing with. We're asking to come up with $3.8 million. It's going to come up with $1.9 million if we have some partners that are going to spend the rest of that money. And that's, you know, obviously someone wants it. I mean, Duke. I mean, they're obviously pushing us to do it, and they're pushing us to do it quickly. There's a reason they want it. I'm trying to figure out what that is.
Well, then I think we would call them up and say, you know, the city commission has no clue where it's going to get $3.9 million. Thank you very much for crunching the numbers into conversation. They're not going to be unhappy.
Okay, well, let me do this. Let me just see if there's a motion or something.
Put that blemish there.
Okay, so I would like to move that Jerry go forth and try his best to get this down to a better deal with some more funding services. I don't want for this not to move forward. I won't put the $150,000 out now, but just say go forth and see what you can do.
I don't think we need a motion unless there's going to be funding attached to it. I think you have I think you have commission support to continue the discussions. I just don't think you have commission support.
I think that's fine.
Okay,
that's fine. We will go do our best.
I'm not here.
And we'll come back and tell you what our best
Jerry,
is.
I'm sorry. Let me just make sure that that's correct. Do we have anyone that would like to make a motion to allocate any dollars towards this at the moment?
I would not.
Okay.
I just do not want to see this go away quietly because this will be a huge blemish.
Let's be clear. We're not doing that.
Jerry's not going
to
go away quietly.
This is 100. This is, do we have the appetite to fund the $150,000 that we may not see again?
Well, I would like to make the decision before we approve the budget. So what I'm saying is go away and come back before September.
I think he's hearing that. I believe that's
right. I hear that loud.
I would say we are committing funds to it because Jerry's staff is working on it and investigating it. So we are.
Let's talk about hard dollars. That's what I was
looking
at.
Okay.
Are we all in line with that?
I don't want any more hard dollars.
Randy, since we're not taking the vote on any funding, do we need to take public comment on this? Or do we need to?
It's
your choice.
Right. So there is no vote on this. I don't believe we have to take
it. Unless
someone would like to speak to this, we certainly will open the floor. Joe, you want to ask Joe?
Unless he's
going to take it. All right, buddy.
Hotel Noble, 151 North Virginia Avenue. You're not going to see me around for while I'm going to France next week, so I'll be out of your hair for a while. First of all, I have a bias, a very strong bias. I'm biased against distribution poles. I'm biased against transmission poles. I'm biased against drop service poles. I'd like to see them all gone. And anything that we can do to advance that cause, I'm in favor of. I think you're moving in the right direction. I think you want to instruct staff to come up with a funding strategy. How are we going to fund this? Who are going to be the partners? What's the estimate of how much they're going to have to pay, and when do we have to pay what? This is a great opportunity. We should not let it go to waste. If there's some way that we can make this go, I'm for it. And I think a lot of other people will be for it. If we let this go and we end up with this great big pole on Fairbanks, we're just going to hear so much about that it's not even, I don't think you want to even discuss that. We should find a way. We have a very bright staff. They'll come up with some solutions if you tell them that's what you want.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joe.
Mary Randall, 1000 South Kentucky Avenue. I
would just echo Joe's words. I think it's a wonderful opportunity, and I agree with Sarah and with Carolyn. I think that, but I want to really thank Jerry. He is one of the people who comes to the podium always, always prepared. He has his notes in order. He has everything worded so that we can understand it. I have never witnessed a presentation by Jerry that I couldn't understand and have the visuals that go with it and a thorough explanation of everything. If everybody did that the way that Jerry does, I would be so very happy, and I think a lot of other people would as well. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'll second that.
Great. We'll close the floor to public comment. Jerry, I think that is kind of the direction from staff, from the dais, see if we can figure out a way to fund it in continuing conversations with Duke. But at this stage, I don't think we're comfortable allocating dollars.
My understanding was clear.
Great. Thank you.
We'll see you at the next meeting.
Folks, we'll open up the floor to public comment for anybody wishing to address the commission on something that's not on the agenda tonight. Jerry, you got a joke. It's a hat trick.
What is that point being?
Next Tuesday, I'll be out of here. This is my last time. Joe Turnover, 151 North Virginia Avenue. I'd like to talk about a very important subject, freedom of speech. Freedom of speech is very, very messy. Anybody who's engaged in it knows it. We all support speech that we agree to. That's a no-brainer. But the idea of supporting speech that we do not agree to, especially if the speech is very wild, does not adhere to our ethical standards, outright lies, we're still obligated to support that speech. I've had a lot of experience dealing with the press, many different aspects, sometimes adversarial. I think the recommendation I heard, the discussion I heard with regard to instructing our board members with regard to how to deal with the press, I think is great. Many people who have never dealt with the press can be intimidated, especially if you're walking along and somebody sticks a microphone right in your face and asks you for your opinion about something you don't really have. You could be caught off guard. I think we should instruct all workers, staff, board members on what to expect in dealing with the press, but not to try to tell people what to do. That's going to be a non-starter, and I would just suggest that we not get involved in that. Some people will comply. Some people will be very good about identifying themselves and what they're doing. Others won't. Sometimes the press will be very good about asking questions so they know how you're coming. Other times they won't. Sometimes they will be misleading. But that's our free speech system. As I said, it's very messy. I would suggest just leaving it alone. Thank you.
Thanks, Joe. And to be clear, the conversation that you're referencing, Commissioner Sprinkler and I, the discussion that we were having was how the city was not effectively communicating to our boards to give them enough information to speak. So that was, we really took it on ourselves. I understand. I just wanted to be clear for those listening in. I completely understand, Joe. I just wanted to be clear because there have been things that have been misreported or misrepresented. Commissioner Cooper.
Yeah, that does bring up a wonderful point, though. I think that when we do our board training, it would be a good idea to give them some training on dealing with the press.
Sure.
Because I often call Clarissa myself before I speak to them, only because sometimes you're right, sometimes it's tricky, and sometimes you are caught off guard. So I would love to see that be part of our training.
I think we're hoping to find that way. That was, again, where we were heading to try to, because we all pretty much do that. When we get a call from the press, we usually call Clarissa and say, hey, what's this about? What's going on? And that was the reference. You know, perhaps check with city staff. Maybe they know a little bit more.
Yeah. On the utility advisory board, it was pretty clear that you couldn't speak for the board. The board voted, and that's how the board spoke. But if you had your own personal opinion, that you could say, this is my personal opinion. This is not the opinion of the board. And that's how I got up here multiple times and said, this is my opinion, not the board's opinion. And then here's how we voted.
I certainly have that on my newsletter.
Yeah. So, I think there was some direction given. I think it's, you know, uniform. Like you say, it's intimidating. I think we got a good press corps, and they're trying to do their best job. And so we do need to give them information as best as we can. And, you know, honest opinions are good things to give them.
Okay, Commissioner Sprinkle.
And in an attempt to make sure everybody hears the whole sides of this, I remember when we got the reviews the evaluations from all the board members, and for 2 years in a row now, invariably board members have said they would really like to have more contact with us. That was very, very clear to me, and that's where that came from. It was from board members saying to us, we want to know more about what you think. So I'm waiting for what the city is going to bring back to us, because we've asked for that, and I understand it's coming back sometime in October or something like that, right, Randy? Because there's two things I've been wanting to see. One is so that the board members who we rely on have the opportunity to speak to us, not just when there's an issue. And secondly, to thank the board members who do so much for us. So those have been my two issues. They haven't changed. And that's why it was very disturbing to be on the other end of all of that and have people say, you want to, you know, if there's anybody out there who's never thwarted anything, it would be me. And so, you know, it's hard sometimes to do this job, but we all know what we're thinking. So those are the two things, and I know this is coming back, and I'm looking forward to that.
Okay.
Oh, Randy, while we're talking about that, we have budgeted for the appreciation.
Yes.
We're going to do that this year?
Yes.
Thank you.
Great. Folks, let's move on to 12A. I'm going to hand the gavel to Commissioner Sprinkle. But before I do, Larry, can we have a simultaneous public reading and then a separate reading for the conditional use, or separate vote on the conditional use?
Yes.
Great, thank you.
Should I go ahead and read the title?
I'll tell you, I don't need to leave.
Mayor,
yes, please.
Thank you. An ordinance amending Chapter 58 Land Development Code, Article 1, Comprehensive Plan, so as to change the future land use designation of institutional to office and professional future land use on the property of 1500 South Orlando Avenue, more particularly described herein, providing for conflict, severability, and an effective date. An ordinance amending Chapter 58 Land Development Code, Article 3 Zoning and the Official Zoning Map, so as to change single-family residential R1A district zoning to Office O1 district zoning on the property of 1500 South Orlando Avenue, more particularly described herein, providing for conflict, severability, and an effective date.
And Jeff, this is the second time this is in front of us. Go ahead.
I answer any questions you have. I don't have anything now.
Does anyone have any questions? Go ahead.
And just to make sure that the approval is with the voluntary limitation?
Yes, it is.
Perfect. Thank you to the applicant. Thank you very much. I think the neighborhood was confused about that, so that brings some great comfort. Thank you.
Do we have to respond if we've had any comments with anybody that's involved in this case?
If you've had any ex parte communication,
okay.
You should just briefly summarize.
Since our last meeting?
Or yes, just since the last meeting.
Just since the last meeting.
I saw Becky outside and she told me they amended it. That was the first I heard of it.
Okay. And I have not since the last meeting.
I have spoken with city staff.
I have had none.
Okay, are we ready? Does anybody else have anything to do with this? Are we ready to open this to public? I'm sorry.
I'd like to move it first and then
okay.
We have there's three items here. Can I motion all three and then
three
we go
separate
on the motion?
Yes.
I would like to move approval of the ordinance amending the comprehensive plan.
Okay.
I'd like to move acceptance of the ordinance amending the zoning and official zoning map. And I'd also like to move the conditional use approval.
Okay, we got the height of the fence.
As has been
changed,
amended within the information that we received here this evening for the 43 feet building height.
Second, and to all three.
Second.
Yes, three times. Okay, all right. So we have a first and a second. It's ready to be voted on.
Public
comment first. Does anyone want to come up and speak to this issue? Seeing none? Man, I was getting ready to call the vote. Okay, it's been seconded. No public comment. We're ready to vote.
Any further discussion from the deck?
And we had those three separate items here, and all three were moved and seconded.
Great. So, any further discussion up here? No. Cindy, we call the motion on the first, please.
Commissioner Seidel?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMackin?
Yes.
Mayor Larry?
Yes. Now on the second.
Commissioner Seidel?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMackin?
Yes.
Mayor Larry?
Yes. And now on the conditional use, please.
Commissioner Seidel?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMackin?
Yes.
Mayor Leary?
Yes. Thank you.
It's kind of like U.S. Grant.
And now, Larry, I'm sorry, I'm trying to get to it on my
page. 12B, parking garage.
12B, parking garage. Would you read that, please?
Yes, sir. An ordinance of the City of Winter Park, Florida, amending Chapter 58, Land Development Regulations, Article 3, Zoning, Sections 58-71 and 58-84, so as to adopt parking garage design guidelines governing the construction of parking garages within the City of Winter Park, providing for review procedures, appeal procedures, and for resolution of interpretations regarding such guidelines, providing for a definition of parking garage, providing for conflict severability, and an effective date.
Great. As a second reading, I would move for approval.
Yeah, I'll second.
Great. Any discussion up here? We have had this discussion before. Any discussion from the audience? Anyone willing to address the commission on this item? Seeing none, we'll close the floor to public comment. You all ready to vote?
Great. Sir.
Cindy, please, 12B.
Commissioner Seidel?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Please note she's absent.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Okay. Commissioner McMackin?
Yes.
Mayor Leary?
Yes. Thank you. Would you please note that in a minute?
I will.
Thank you. I don't want people to think she had to withhold for any specific reason.
That's right.
Item 12C, the appeal by Rollins College.
I had a moment for everybody to speak to me. I'm the second team on this. Lindsay is on vacation this week, so bear with me as we go through this. In January of 2015, Rollins had applied for a demolition permit on the property located at 483 Holt Avenue. And I'll just put up a picture of that, if I may. During the historic to the Historic Preservation Board, the Historic Preservation Board voted to deny the recommendation to demolish the building. At such time, Rollins appealed that decision, and the appeal comes to the City Commission. Rollins, at that point, decided to hold back on that appeal for a number of reasons, but has since, the project was there. And let me find the area or the actual picture. Rollins has since come forward and asked that the appeal be placed on the City Commission agenda with an offer to allow for the demolition of the property subject to a number of conditions, that the property would continue to be a zoned R2 low-density residential, that the property would be redeveloped as either a new duplex or single-family home, that the proposed new use would be reviewed by the Historic Preservation Board subject to the HPB ordinance requirements, and that the existing duplex would not be demolished until the city has issued a building permit for the new unit. Given those conditions, we feel that the question that was came up at the Historic Preservation Board, which is what are they going to do with this property, and Rollins at that time did not know what they were going to do with the property, have an answer, and staff would recommend approval of the demolition of this subject to these four conditions, Interestingly enough, last week, I believe it was, this building took a pretty significant hit by a tree, so I believe Rollins will be coming forward with probably a redesign of this fairly soon, Rebecca Wilson is here to speak on Rollins' behalf, but staff would recommend approval subject to these four conditions.
And I have, Ms. Mayor, I've got a question.
Sure.
And Dory, it's either for you or Ms. Wilson. When I was actually on historic preservation when this project occurred, and it was the I'll call it the fourplex that's on the corner of Pennsylvania and Holt. And at that time, we had requested that whatever was going to be built there would be built in accordance with the College Quarter design standards. And I see in here where it says we'll be in accordance with historic preservation ordinance, but to me that also includes the design standards within the College Quarter. I just want to clarify that, yes, whatever, because I'm in favor of this. There are standards by which new construction occurs within the historic district, and I want to make sure that those design standards are either implied here or are part of this agreement, because I'm very much in favor of this. I just want to make sure, because that was...
Becky Wilson, 215 North Yellow Drive, here on behalf of Rollins College. That was our intent. If it wasn't clear, if you want to amend it so that it says that...
I tried to put that clarification in there, but it was important, because if you do look at that...
Does that address the...
Yes, and if you do look at that fourplex, I think that really...
Across the street, somewhere is developed a fourplex something,
and that's what
that
I'm,
has that character.
That's what I'm referring to.
And that is the intent is us agreeing to go back.
2 and 4 minutes.
No, it's
hold on a second.
I think you're thinking of the wrong building. That's why I wanted to make sure you knew what we were talking about. Because this is just 200-300 square feet.
I'm saying whatever they do.
Okay, all right.
That they need to adhere to the same kind of design standards.
Oh, is that?
Yes, I got it. Okay.
not that they built some other building.
Okay,
there.
Got it.
I apologize if I...
And forgive me, because I don't know the details of what's in the College Quarter design standards. What's important to me is that when I look at that 58479, it says there are definite plans for the reuse. So in my mind, it's about ensuring that it upholds the character of the surrounding area. If that's the same thing as building in accordance with the standards, then I'm good. Is that the same thing?
And that is why we agreed not to actually demo until the plans that you all are talking about are approved by the Historic Preservation Board.
Okay.
And I wanted to make sure I was answering from the audience Dory's statement correctly. I have not had a specific conversation now that there was some damage to the house as to if that is accelerating the plans. I will say, as most of the public knows, Rollins College just got a new president a few days ago. And so, there needs to be some deference.
Does he have veto power?
But we need to make sure he's up on everything and let him prioritize some projects that are coming forward. So we would continue to keep it in good repair.
This project is... The duplex is vacant at this time.
Yeah.
One of the things that had happened since the Historic Preservation Board meeting, Rollins did put some significant effort into cleaning up the lot, cleaning up the property, cleaning up the building.
Looks,
and as long as they maintain it, it doesn't matter to the city whether there's a person in it or not, but we want to make sure that the building doesn't run into code issues as we were headed in that direction the last time. But they've upkept the building, and if there was damage, we would expect it to either be straightened up or kept in such a manner that fits the neighborhood character.
Dory, in your vision of this, I apologize that I don't know the details of what's in the actual code about this, but when it says here there are definite plans for the reuse if the proposed demolition is carried out, and that there is an explanation of the effect of those on the character of the surrounding area, the only thing I care about is that whatever we build there
complements the character of College Quarter. I believe the fact that Rollins came forward and said they're going to either put a duplex or a single family home there, number one, that tells me what the use is going to be. Secondly, and they're telling you that as the City Commission, they're also telling you they're going to take that use back to the Historic Preservation Board for approval. I know nothing about the HPB other than having sat through a year of their meetings to know that they will make sure, and I guarantee those neighbors will make sure, that this building meets the character of the College Quarter neighborhood. So if you'd
like to condition our acceptance and approval and override of the boards on that, that it meet the character of the surrounding community, that's all.
I'm sure if that's the direction you want to give the HPB to look at as part of the condition of approval for the demolition, they would take that and move on and pass that forward.
Details. Yep. Well.
But I believe that they have met the intent of the Historic Preservation Ordinance. They've come forward to you with a very defined use. They have said that they will go back to the Historic Preservation Board for approval. They will also not demolish until that HPB has given approval of that use, no matter whether that's one meeting or however meetings it takes. But I feel like they meet the ordinance requirements.
Great.
Thanks. Happy to answer questions. Yeah.
Thanks. A couple questions. Regards to the lot and the depth of the lot, one of the conversations, and I spoke to Margie Bridges, who was with Commissioner Cooper at the meeting with Rollins, and I had a brief conversation with Cindy, that, and I want the commission to hear this, because one of the things that I talked about with them is, you know, a lot of this is about keeping the character of that street and that neighborhood, and Rollins has a lot of pressure to expand their services and expand the things that they're doing, that these lots, could they be shortened up somewhat and still be residential and allow that commercial in the back to flow into it to help accommodate the future plans that Rollins is working on? And so that's something just, I kind of want that out there, that with regards to, you know, putting families and putting duplexes in there and putting, you know, that's what the neighbors want. And I've talked to them, and that's what they say. But they also understand that Rollins has needs. And so so as they look to do this lot, I would keep that in the back of your mind as we're doing these plans for it, that there could be some space available to switch out that back of that lot. You know, I don't know what their intentions are. I'm not trying to tell them. But to me, that seemed like a good opportunity for them to get some more square footage for some other things besides the family housing.
So. I'm not sure I understand what you just said, Greg.
If you go look in the...
Do you have that to put back up?
Yeah, if you look at the lots that they show, there's probably a depth.
Oh, they were deep lots, isn't
there? They're like 150 maybe. I don't know. I can't tell from here. But if you look, they're a lot deeper than the other lots.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Rollins has been doing some, you know, I don't know what their current master plan is. I've seen some of their older stuff. But, you know, I think one of the, you know, the issue with Neelong here is this is a neighborhood street. So if you have houses and you keep it a neighborhood street.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Right, that you could shorten that lot up and they could get some more property. That's 140. And there's some of those houses.
Do they still meet the minimum standard?
Well, that's what do we consider variances if they're, you know, if they're looking to keep that a historic looking street. That do we consider that in the future? And it doesn't need to be talked about now, but I just wanted to bring that up.
It might. I'm just. All of the more reason to make them fit so perfectly in the neighborhood.
Well, I understand it. I want to get back to something here because we're giving them a direction. We're saying character, and I think what defines the character is the College Quarter design standards.
Yeah.
And so they have to have something to apply that to. It just can't be character. So.
Right.
When I do get around to making a motion, I'm going to clarify that and add that it, whatever it is, comply with the College Quarter design standards, which I believe will address anybody's character issues because that's what they were put in there for. So, and whether, you know, I really don't want to get into approving anything above and beyond what has been presented to us this evening about this site, whether, you know, I mean, to me that's.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I was just
saying that piece of property here, what we're going to do with it, I'm going to put a condition on it, and we're going to go forward. I don't want to get into...
No, I'm not trying to. I was just trying to make people aware that this is something in conversations that I've had with folks is all. That's all. I totally...
For disclosure.
Right, and I also trust Rollins. I mean, they were the best-looking campus in the country, I think. They do things right, so I have a feeling that this will be a nice asset in the neighborhood.
Thank you. Happy to address any other questions or concerns you all have. If there's anyone in the audience, just wanted the opportunity.
Always.
No, Joe left.
But Margie's here.
Well, we have no motion on the table yet.
I'd like to make one if we need one before.
Well, I'd like to make a motion so that the public knows what they're coming in.
I'd like to move for approval of the applicant's request with the condition that any new structure that is built there comply with the College Quarter design standards.
And I'll second that.
I would add that as much of a clarification of what's already been presented as anything else, but
okay.
I'd like to have that in there officially.
That's great.
A second then?
I actually heard Commissioner Seidel second. That's okay. That's okay. That's quite all right. Any further discussion, or can we open the floor to public comment? Okay, let's open the floor to public comment. Anyone wishing to address the commission on this, please step forward.
I'm Nancy LaPorte Shaw. I'm the owner of the adjacent property at 479 Holt Avenue. And you guys have probably seen me up here over the last 6 years. I've been fighting the fight, pointing out how Rollins College has been defying all the rules that apply to us, breaking the codes that we must adhere to, and really negatively impacting my life and the quality of living and my property value. My house has been for sale for that long. That's always been the common. I was really happy to get this letter where it looks like Rollins is suddenly saying that they will adhere by the same rules that all of us would if we wanted to demolish our property in the historic district. And if I understand correctly, that's simply what they're saying. They will follow the rules. Twice they've run away and tried to demolish this property without following the rules, and I've been involved in stopping it those two times. After all these years doing this, I have a degree of skepticism, and I hate to say that because what they've said and what they've done have been two different things. I just want to be sure that, you know, if they put the plans in, they get the building permit, that there's some kind of repercussion if they then demolish and don't go ahead and build, because that's kind of in the back of my mind. I also have to say that the idea about lopping off our backyards is the worst thing I've heard in a long time, and for 6 years for us to fight to keep the corner property of our historic district, and to hear you might want to chisel away, the lots are 140 feet deep. Those three properties, mine in the middle, are all 140 feet deep. They're small lots, and it's ridiculous to say that we want to have a maintenance facility encroach into our backyard. So I'm sorry, that's a horrible idea, and we've worked so hard in that neighborhood to keep that core property of our historic district. And all those years that we spent to develop a historic district, just to hear that burn up casually, like, oh, well, let's look and build a maintenance facility that they want to remove from their ideal location and their campus. I'm sorry, I thought that was pretty ridiculous. But anyway, I'm certainly not going to oppose, and I'm the property owner that's the most impacted, but I just want to be sure that we make sure that they're serious and that if they demolish it and the building permit's there, that they can't suddenly say, oh, we lost funding or now we're not going to build, because that's on the back of all our minds. And I'm not alone on that. I'm talking to some of my neighbors. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's a very good point.
Margie Bridges, 767 Antoinette Avenue. I would like to say that I had an opportunity as a vice president, current vice president of the College Quarter Neighborhood Association, to meet with several city staff members and also with Commissioner Cooper and also with Jeff Eisenbarth. Becky Wilson was there. To discuss this and what the plans that the college does have in mind with this piece of property. And they told our board at that time that they are very interested in keeping that property residential, that they would be interested in faculty housing there on that site, which would benefit the college and obviously benefit the neighborhood as well. We have a number of faculty members there, not only of Rollins, but other higher education institutions in our community. We welcome the opportunity to work with the college to make that a suitable residential home there. They did suggest to us that they had not yet decided whether it would be single family or possibly a duplex again. But either way, the College Quarter Neighborhood Association, the College Quarter Historic District, does have an overlay, a zoning overlay, called our design guidelines. They were voted on, they were approved.
I'm sure the Historic Preservation Board is aware of them. If they're not, maybe I could make them aware of them, remind them. But it is very specific design guidelines for new construction in our neighborhood. And so I appreciate very much your willingness to make sure that those are adhered to, because it's significant to the historic district. I would like to say that a conversation that I had with Commissioner Seidel was that our neighborhood is obviously, as is our neighbor whose property is immediately adjacent to this particular property, Rollins College is our immediate neighbor and we are theirs. And so we look forward to working together, trying to find the best possible changes that may come up and work with the college as they propose expansion, et cetera, et cetera. But we ask that you, the city, would protect us, protect our very, very important downtown historic residential properties, and that we all work together to achieve that and to protect our little neighborhood there. So appreciate it.
Right on time. Practiced. Practice.
It's not her first.
Anyone else? Great. Oh, thank you. Would you like to? We're going to close the floor to public comment. Becky, you're free to address any comments.
Just with regard to an assertion that Rollins might submit for building permit and demo, I just want to be really clear that Rollins College has a lot more at stake in this community than the demolition of a 600 square foot building on the outskirts of its campus. We're not going to do anything to hurt our relationship with the city, and I'm not going to do anything that hurts my relationship in standing at this podium with you all. So that is absolutely not our intent, and significant funds will be spent in getting ready for the architectural plans and then the building.
I'm very excited to see it.
And I think that we're all understanding and hopeful of that, but I think the neighbor's concerns were valid. So hearing you say that gives me greater comfort, and I hope it does as well to the neighbor.
I appreciate
so thank
it.
You.
Thanks.
Any other questions for the applicant before we move?
I have a question for Larry.
Sure.
Larry, is there any way, I know in a lot of the agreements that we have, there are time periods that things have to be done by. Is there any way to apply this to kind of tighten it up a little bit? Or?
The way I read it, it doesn't call for a development agreement. You could require a development agreement under the code. But it talks about no demolition until they get a building permit.
But I think the tree just fell on rehabilitation. That's just a tiny little duplex.
But for residential construction, George, it's 12 months, right? They have to construct complete within 12 months. So you've got a 12-month time period under your code where they have to build the property.
So there's no. So the damage that was done by the tree doesn't end up causing the duplex to have to come down now. Okay, good. Okay, I didn't know how. It's a small house, big tree. I'm sure how that worked out. Thank you.
Okay. Any further discussion at the commission? There you go. Okay. Cindy, would you please read the roll?
Commissioner Seidel?
This is modified, right? Per.
Well, yes. The motion is to accept with the guidelines of the historic of the
so to make sure.
Sure.
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner Mackin?
Yes.
Mayor Leary?
Yes. Thank you. And folks, again, item 12D has been pulled from this agenda, as noted earlier. So let's move on to 12E.
I'm getting there. Pardon me.
That's okay. Get
my eyes on.
Get your design glasses and your reading glasses.
Get my eyes working. An ordinance of the City of Winter Park, Florida, relating to buildings, amending Chapter 22 to incorporate the Florida Building Code with certain administrative and technical amendments, which include a fire sprinkler requirement as the Winter Park Building Code, designating applicable wind design criteria, updating the property and building maintenance code with amendments, and providing an effective date.
Thank you, Larry. George.
This is our triannual update of our local administrative ordinance that fits into the latest edition of the Florida Building Code. We're now into the fifth edition of the Florida Building Code, and I just told Mary Randall I had prepared a PowerPoint for her. And she just laughed, and I said I'd be happy to send it to her so that she'd fully understand it. I can go through that if you'd like.
I would like for you to, George. Thank you very much. You've taken the time to prepare it. I'd like to understand what we're changing.
It's very short. So, Patrick?
We can also sit afterwards with you.
It's a very short, I think it's only like six or seven slides.
George, you know what I'm most interested in? Every time we update a code based on some statute, we also end up making little administrative housekeeping changes that we want to make. I'd like to understand what those are. The things that are in the law are the law were preempted, but the things that we're making in addition to the law, I'd like to understand.
Sure. This ordinance also was approved unanimously by our construction board, and that occurred recently, over a week ago. Approximately a week ago they met, and they had copies of what I did. It looks like it's a big ordinance because it's 30 pages. However, I reproduce all of our current building ordinance plus our property and maintenance ordinance, and delineated, you know, the additions and the structure, so you'd see a perspective of the whole ordinance to make it easier rather than just having little bits and pieces there. Patrick, go to the next slide. Okay. The major items that we amended, as shown there, first of all, it's updating to the fifth edition of the Florida Building Code, and then getting into the substance. When you go through this, each edition of the building code sometimes has different section numbers, so we had to, you know, go throughout the ordinance and in certain cases readdress the section numbers. We did go through this in detail also with our city attorney's office, to FAM. She and I went back and forth several days because there's a lot of administrative maneuvering with this. But the first section there, I pointed out that we clarified actions to be taken when a permit expires. There are certain things that we want to make sure take place when a permit is abandoned or expires, so that we can put special conditions on that to not harm neighbors and to make sure the property is clean. If they've abandoned the site, to make sure they've removed parts of buildings there in an expeditious way. The next item is we added a provision that specifically in our administrative code, which is this ordinance here, that addresses dust control during construction. Often in neighborhoods, you'll see them cutting concrete, and I'll see concrete dust flying across the street. And we address it now just under as a general safety issue, but I put a specific provision in the code that specifically addressed dust.
It's very bad.
And particularly the need, how it's done, through wetting down or other means. Next slide, Patrick.
Are you saying that was not required and that was something you did?
It's not specifically in the code. Should somebody question us, you know, we're...
Well, it's really bad because I see them out there with just like a hose running it on huge stacks of debris and the dust is going everywhere. So we're giving them, this is meaningful. What we have in the code now is more than just the garden hose squirting on top of the pile. Thank you.
Yes.
Is that something that the DOT projects would have to adhere to as well?
No. They're not under the jurisdiction of the City of Winter Park's administrative building code. They're the state buildings and their construction projects are not under the purview of the Florida Building Code or our local administrative amendments. However, I would think as a courtesy, if they created such a problem, they would, you know, abide by a local government's provisions.
I think we should advise them up front. I'm all for writing letters to people telling them what you want them to do. At least then they might.
Right.
Well, I think pointing out we've added to our code, and we would appreciate your cooperation on the projects along Fairbanks.
Tell them what you want to do.
Right, yeah, absolutely.
Act like we have the authority.
But as long as we have the authority to add to that, that's my question, okay? Whether we have the ability to require them to do it.
We had a section that specifically, as pointed out there, during demolition process, we've limited the hours for demolition because there's so much demolition among our single-family areas that I've created some specific hours that they could operate, which are less than our current hours for noise related to construction. And those hours are like 7:30 in the morning till 6 p.m. in a residential area, and it's a little bit longer in a non-residential area. Right now, under the noise ordinance for construction and demolition, they have from 7 in the morning till 9 p.m. And again, that's in the noise ordinance, so I thought it'd be wise to put in our administrative ordinance specific hours so that we could point to the ordinance, the hours.
And you said 7:30
to 6 p.m., Monday through Saturday. And of course, not on Sundays, not on holidays as well. So that was added as a administrative addition. Next item is, you know, throughout in several pages of the administrative review, it deals with all of the inspections we do on every type of construction job, from a single family to a large commercial building. So you'll find on all of those pages, several pages, we have our specific inspection requirements for at the various stages of construction. Probably the largest one that changed is with regard to swimming pool construction. There's six different inspections related to that. The Florida Building Code only has two. And there's other areas that we've added inspections.
What did we add that we didn't require?
Where that came from is over the past 10-15 years, due to safety concerns over electrocution from failure to bond lights and pools, pool safety regarding the suction requirements under pools. There's actually safety provisions for the pump system. There's electrical requirements regard to bonding and ground fault interrupters within a swimming pool. There's been many more safety and barrier requirements. All of those things have been added to the inspection process to make sure that a pool is built safely under the code today. So that's where some of the additional inspections have come from with regard to swimming pools. There's additional inspections in other areas under our foundations and framing, two or three here and there, and we can go through them in the code if you like, but that's basically where they are. Next item is let's go back one more, Patrick. And on page 17, which I think is actually 18 in the printed out version you have, is we've had a clearer path for dealing with violations. We had a section in there that needs to come out. By the way, there is an amendment in the ordinance. There is a change that I found that there's a older carryover section that covered violations that needs to be stricken through, and that's in 116.6.4. So I would ask that you all amend it when you pass this to strike section 116.6.4.
What page?
That's on page 19. That was the older section that dealt with violations of the code and the process that you undergo when we find a building code violation.
You march through the title. So what you're saying is that whole section.
Right. You'll see the title stricken through. The whole section needs to be stricken through. And it was replaced by the item on page 18, which lists section 114.1 and 114.2. And that gives a much more comprehensive process. And where that comes from is every three-year update, my Building Official Association, the State Association, puts out a model administrative code. And sometimes there's items in there that I'll pick and choose that we need to put in our ordinance, and this is part of one of them. The other one was the swimming pool inspections. By the way, the state's model code was originally modeled after ours, which I prepared back in 2001 when the Florida Building Code went into effect, and they used our code as a
original model for the State Building Official Association. At that time, I served on the Florida, on the Building Commission, and was quite involved with that process. Okay, now Patrick. Construction management procedures. This is in our ordinance now. There's just a minor tweak on this. Again, this is a requirement that we have for mostly commercial jobs. We can use it on a residential job that requires that the designer and the contractor give us a construction management plan on where they're going to lay down all their equipment, where they're going to receive their equipment, where they're going to place it, how they're going to fence the property, where their construction workers are going to park, how they're going to get access to the site, what streets. So we require this on every major commercial job, and we route it to the departments, including our traffic manager, for routes into the city so that they come down the right streets with heavy equipment. So this continues in the ordinance. There's just a minor tweak there, as you can see. Okay, Patrick.
So we haven't required a construction management plan in the past?
We have it now, and Bennett, we have required it, but there was just a minor adjustment in this. I just want to make you aware that we require this.
For single-family homes?
In certain cases, if there is a large home being constructed, particularly some of these lakefront properties, and they're running into problems with construction workers parking all over the neighborhood, you know, we will ask them for a plan on how they're going to bring in workers without tying up the entire street, blocking roads, things like that.
I would think it would be more important for a little house shoved close together with 20 or 30 others. Do you know what I mean? That seems like that would be the time that would be very helpful to know.
I'm just saying, if you go back to the previous slide, okay, those are new words in here. We may have done that, but you've never had it in the code before. Is that right? If you go back to the previous slide, it says construction management plan, requirement to provide. That was not required before. It's now required in code.
We just named it in that. Now, all that adds is the name, the construction management detailing it. So,
oh, I see.
The name of the section.
I got it. Okay. Got it. Okay.
Okay, Patrick. Next item. We clarify, again, we require everything that you see up there. We require that a proper barrier be in place when they're building a new swimming pool, when construction workers are not present. Again, this is not in the Florida Building Code, but this is in our administrative provision because it's equally important to have the pool protected when workers are not on a job, weekends. So this has been quite handy to have as a requirement over the last many years.
Do we already require it when the workers are present? Because when they're working, they're not looking for kids.
Well, if it's the swimming pool contractor workers present and they're working in the pool,
that's different.
So,
but you know what I'm saying? I'm saying on a construction site when there's a swimming pool in the backyard.
Yes.
Like the one that both of us got numerous calls on this year.
Yes.
And you go out there to that swimming pool. Those swimming pools, are they not covered by this so that kids wandering in the neighborhood?
Yes.
Okay, they are covered by this?
They're covered under their current
Perfect.
Ordinance.
Thank
right.
you.
The next section that I pointed out up there, it doesn't change, but in the last edition of Florida Building Code, there was a new mechanism by which they identified the wind speed for design of strong wind force criteria structurally for the design of both homes and commercial buildings. And this method resulted in much higher numbers. However, the numbers weren't quite, changed in a way that resulted in us reducing actually the design pressure for buildings in Winter Park and parts of Orange County all the way over to East Orange County. However, I did have the opportunity to adjust this to the previous edition of the code to a wind speed that is more comparable with what we've had for years. To put that in layman's terms, Previously, the design speed was called a 3-second gust for design buildings in Winter Park and has been for many years. The last edition of the code went to a different method of displaying that wind speed. We went from 110 miles an hour to 139 miles an hour with the same, but it's still the same design pressure, but they call it a different number. It's called a ultimate velocity wind speed. So what I did was put a more accurate number for our wind speed determination in Winter Park that protects us, protects our homes and buildings without lessening the design pressure requirement for homes and buildings. So that carries over also. Patrick, can go
ahead. And you didn't increase it either?
Correct.
Okay,
correct.
So it's exactly what it always was.
Yes.
It's just you changed the words.
Right, exactly.
And was it always higher than what was mandated? I mean, I assume after Charlie, we had some pretty big...
Yeah, but we aren't on the coast, so we didn't go to those hurricane numbers.
After Charlie, our design criteria went up about 10 miles per hour statewide.
And this doesn't lower.
It was a statewide.
And this doesn't lower.
Originally, it was between 90 and 100 miles an hour under a different criteria. Then it went to 110 under a 3-second gust criteria.
So this 139 or 3
equates to our previous amount.
Got it.
Right. One of the most important things in this amendment, this ordinance, is it carries over our fire sprinkler requirement for our central business district. This is a local technical amendment. We have listed the criteria in all the whereases of the ordinance that gives us the opportunity to modify the Florida Building Code under this criteria. The purpose of it is relates to the fact that in the downtown area that you have buildings that can be built on zero property lines, and there's many older buildings, therefore that necessitates special protection.
But this has been in effect, as you say, for 20
years. Right, and we've carried this over for the last 25 plus years.
Okay.
But under state law, we have to readopt it each time, so that's what we're doing.
I hear a lot about this from people.
Okay.
It's not
sure.
Do you
hear
it?
Yeah. Next country.
It's expensive.
We do, but I'm glad we do it. Thank you.
Another item that we deal with in this whenever we update the building code, we usually update our international property maintenance code. I don't know if you even knew we utilize this. This is a publication of the international codes. So we update the edition that we're using from 2012 to 2015. And if you've looked through the portion of it dealing with the property maintenance codes, we have adopted a huge number of amendments. Matter of fact, the definition of nuisance alone has, I think it's 23 or 25 definitions, and that was written, again, I put that in the code 15, 20 years ago, and I borrowed many of those definitions from the city of Carmel, California. And the interesting thing about it, when I did, this was 15, 20 years ago that I put that in there, and we've carried it through. But there is no definition of a nuisance in the International Property Maintenance Code. So we have like 24, 25 more criteria than in the code that's used throughout the United States. But with that, I'll answer any questions.
Question?
I have a very quick question. I've had an incredibly positive experience with Urban Oasis tearing down a house on my street and rebuilding. And I don't know if what they are doing is required by code or it's just their attention to detail. But it's such a marvelous thing that if it's not in our code, I'd like you to at least think about it as we go forward. And that is, they actually screen their dumpster and their portlet with very nice... it might be chain link with the green screen around it. It's just extremely tasteful. The site is immaculate. And I know you hear all the time about the bad news because I get those phone calls too. But I'm going to tell you, I don't know what this builder is doing that others don't do, but I would sure love for you to go and talk to him and see what it is, because he comes, he doesn't come from this area. He's from up north. He does historic homes in the Maryland area, but right. whatever those codes are that he's used to working under, we ought to bring him home to Winter Park, because I'm going to tell you, the way he keeps that site is bar none incredible.
Right. He's already done a fine job there.
He is, and I don't know the difference in what he's doing, what we right. require, but I sure we should look at that.
Okay.
Because it's been a pleasure to live two doors down from him building a house. That's hard to say. But thank you for all this.
Okay. I just want to comment that I do read those things that we get every week about what's happening, and everybody in town is building a pool. That's what happens when it's really hot in the summer, so lots of new pools are coming online. I just want to make sure they know if they're building a pool, they got six inspections and not three, because that's what we will hear about how hard it is to build a pool in Winter Park. So I want to make sure they're safe, but I also want to make sure we're not over doing it.
Just to clarify, it won't necessarily be six inspections. Some of those might be combined at one time. Like, it may end up being three total.
Okay.
While
that's
they
fine.
Cover the six different points.
Right? It's just that in here it shows three and then it shows six, so that's why I said that.
Any discussion? Commissioner?
Move to approve.
I'll second.
I
couldn't buy it. It's just too painful.
Philip, do you want to comment on this item? Anybody wishing to address the commission?
It's getting late. I'm hungry.
Great. Seeing none. Are you all ready to vote on this?
Yes, sir.
Wonderful. Cindy, please.
Commissioner Seidel?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMackin?
Yes.
Mayor Leary?
Yes. Thanks. Commissioner Seidel, commission reports.
Nothing new. Thanks.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Only that I learned something. I had a wonderful trip around town with Chief White to look at signs, of which we have way more than we need. And they are working on that, and that I can appreciate, because that's just something we just need to look at when we start thinking about how our city looks. And then I learned something from him, and I'm going to tell y'all, because I bet you didn't know it either. Did you know that pods that you put out in front of your house are not supposed to be in Winter Park? And we have them. Those big things, those big buildings that people put out there, I didn't know that. So there's a lot of things. Is that not right?
You're talking about the things that you store things in?
Yeah. Yeah.
You just learned one thing?
I don't know. I learned a lot of things. Okay, that could be on my revenue enhancement list.
Okay.
Yeah. Is that it? Yeah. Thank you. But it was very interesting, and I appreciate the time. And we still have our own work cut out for us to beautify our city by de-signing it.
Amen.
I agree. Commissioner Cooper.
Two things. I was fortunate to go to the Men of Valor ceremony on Saturday at the community center, and it was put on by the Ideal Women's Club, and they selected men in the community to honor. So I just want to give a shout out to Ronnie Moore, because he was one of the recipients, but also another recipient was a young man by the name of Copeland Davis. He grew up, he's a product of the Wellwood Nursery. He grew up on the west side of Woods Park, and he's gone on. He's a jazz performer. He's played for Bush in the White House. He's on the Las Vegas and the Los Angeles Honoree Hall of Fame for music. So that was just kind of fun to see all of that. And they had the Tuskegee Airmen again there, so that was nice. I always enjoy that. And the other thing is more a request that I'm hoping I can get someone interested in other than just me, because here's the tricky part of this. And put your pencil down, because this isn't for the press. This is for
that works. You can tell them that. Let me know how that works.
This is just for us.
Yeah, honey, this isn't for you.
Yeah. This is backup info. I'm teasing you. You know I am. But I would just like for us to ask staff, and it has to be, all of us have to be on the same page, that we're doing it just to understand what our options are. I don't want to get to the place where we have to raise taxes. I'm hoping that we can avoid that. And one of the steps that we need to do before we get there is to try to reduce cost and create alternate revenue sources. So I've been kind of talking to my neighbors who are commissioners in other cities and saying, what do you do that maybe we should look at? And I have a list here, and none of these I'm recommending. I want to be very clear about that. But I do think that we owe it to ourselves to look at it. And the question is, how do we do that? Do we ask staff to look at these and maybe have a little workshop and just understand the alternatives that we have? I don't want it to appear that it's something that I'm saying, I have 12 things on this list and I want us to go do them all. But I do want us to understand them. I want us to understand what our options are relative to transportation, relative to a commercial park usage fee, relative to the fire service fee, relative to some changes we could make to our pensions, relative to towing fees. I mean, there are things other cities do that I'd like to see us understand.
What do you got?
So, well, my question.
I think you just
Some of them are this big, you know. Some of them are no-brainers. Others require a lot of decision and thought and compromise and understanding of the community. So the question becomes, would you support asking staff to kind of give us some understanding of these things that I know other people are doing to see if it's worth it for us?
We're all in the other seats.
Tell us, what are they?
Can we just say, would you submit that to staff?
The question is, could we listen?
Do you
need a copy first?
I would always suggest, if there's revenue opportunities and saving opportunities, I would always support that. I just don't want to have staff go do tremendous amount of research right now. I think they could probably give us quick questions, but quick answers.
I think so, too.
Okay.
And I just
so you're just not asking for a detailed report by staff?
I just want to make sure that we're all okay with talking about it and understanding. I'm not saying I want to do all these things.
If you want to increase taxes, Commissioner, you go right ahead.
I cannot increase taxes.
Wait.
You were talking about that already.
Talks are all about. I think Randy's already gotten my recommendations for budget as the same thing. Isn't that what that is?
But no, it's more of a plea that says, as a member of a board, can we just brainstorm a little bit about this and not have it have to be me presenting, wanting to do every one of these things, because I don't. But I do want us to understand what the financial impacts might be and decide
and
whether it's worth it.
Having gone, as we talked about other options before and voted those down, I actually think this is something. Can we wait until we're done with this budget cycle first? I don't need it next week because we've got a lot of other stuff to do. But I think if we're really going to look at these additional revenue sources, it's something we have to start earlier in the budget process.
Absolutely.
And not
we have to start now for next.
Well, I'd like to start after we've adopted this budget. And
so perhaps next budget session.
And that works all right.
But okay, we start that.
And Randy, would you do me a favor? Would you
much earlier in the year, so it's not
I'll turn it in with my whole budget.
Could I ask that Randy just send that out to all of us so we have an idea of what you're talking about?
Absolutely. Oh, I hate to get to just don't title it Carolyn Cooper wants to do. I just want to look at all of them and understand the impacts and the possibilities.
Great. Anything else, Commissioner?
No, that's all.
Thank you. Commissioner McClain?
Just quickly to reiterate Randy's comment earlier about the visioning process that's going on, and the meeting is on the 20th, I believe. Plenty of good seats still available, and we'd love to have a packed house at that.
The speaker
is absolutely incredible and was actually one of the key reasons that I felt that this group that we hired
was the group to hire.
So this,
I
this,
watched his it, YouTube. This, did you actually get to hear him?
Yes. He actually spoke to us via, he was out of town,
well,
but spoke
I
to us over the internet. But it's well worth the evening, and I'm hoping that we do have a full house for that.
Thank you.
Other than that, that's all I have to say.
I have two things, and this is just based on, you just made me think of one. Randy, can you tell us where we are with the RFP processes for the two that we have out there today?
Yes, the city attorney RFPs are due tomorrow, I believe. The labor attorneys due, I think it's Thursday, and the lobbyist is like the 23rd or 24th. It's later in the month.
Okay, great.
Yes,
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
The library public meetings, I believe, are Saturday and Sunday. a week and a half from now. So before our next meeting, there's those two public meetings for the library.
Right.
And everyone should be aware of that.
Yes, thank you.
Hey, can I tell you I have coffee talk Thursday?
Oh, that's right. That's important.
I was going to miss this.
We can get this stuff to
you. When we're talking about
That's important.
Yes. That's what I tell them. She says, remember I had an anniversary? I say, yeah, of course I remember.
Hey, I have toys. You're telling me you get a toy.
And the last thing, Randy, you and I had spoken some time back about, in this conversation, it's an item that's come up a couple of times on this commission, about high-speed internet, high-speed wire. Mm-hmm. Is there something staff's prepared to bring back to us?
I don't know if we have it ready to bring back. We have a staff working on it. I'll get you an answer on that.
Can you get it?
We have staff working on it.
This is something that we could possibly include in this budget. If, you know, time's a wasting, and every inch that we put underground right now is... it's going to pay off in the future. With that, thank you. I appreciate it. Have a great night.